all the while casting wary looks at the city and the Titans. Alidian's frown deepened. Even without the city, the army and the Titans could likely devastate the rebellion army. So why sit behind their walls and wait? Once again, she had the insidious doubt that she was missing something essential.
"Are you ready?"
Devkin asked at her side. Alidian nodded and reached to the light-cast bird on her saddle. She'd taken great care to prepare the bird. Lifting the bird aloft, she sent it winging across the gap between armies. It soared over the city wall and passed between two great titans. Unopposed, it flew to the citadel. It reached the fortress and circled, searching for its target. Then it dived to a balcony extending from the highest tower. Alidian cast a sight charm, enhancing her vision to that of an eagle. Her eyes tingled as the charm threaded into her flesh, and the distant fortress leapt into focus, the bird alighting on the arm of Tariah. The woman smiled, as if she'd expected the message. Alidian could not hear her own words, but watched Tariah's reaction. When it finished, Alidian's bird disintegrated, and Tariah began to cast her own. Astyn and Princess Aura rode up to Alidian's side.
"Do you think she will accept?"
he asked. "Of course," Alidian said. "She wants to stall, and talking to me accomplishes that."
"We could have held our own if they hadn't cast those things," he said, stabbing a finger at the Titan with four arms. "But why do they not attack?"
"I don't know," Alidian said. "But rest assured, the woman has a plan." "Should we be afraid?" Princess Aura asked. "No," Alidian said, lying with a smile. "Whatever intrigue she has prepared, we will stop."
"I just don't understand," Aura said. "It's almost like she wants a siege."
"She can last forever in her city," Astyn said. "Senin scouts reported seeing crops within the walls. They are ready to last a while."
"What about to the east?" Devkin asked.
"Same as the west," Aura said. "The Empire has withdrawn to Herosian. By all accounts, the Verenai still protect their guild halls, but it appears the entire western part of the Empire has been abandoned."
"Do you think they've left Terros behind as well?" Astyn asked. "We could send scouts to the other cities."
"I would advise against it," Alidian said. "To divide our forces would leave us vulnerable, but you may want to send word to the eastern villages." "Many will join us," Aura said with a nod.
"I'll send scouts immediately," Astyn said.
Alidian spotted a flicker of light appearing on the fortress and launch into the sky. It flapped its wings and soared above the city, passing between two titans, a pinprick of light between mountains of magic. The bird folded its wings and dived to Alidian. She raised her arm to it, and the hawk clamped onto her arm, opening its beak to speak. The words came in Tariah's voice, the tone revealing her smile.
"Sister," Tariah said, "your army has grown since last we met, but I have no desire to see blood spilt upon my new city. I accept your invitation, but merely wish to change the location. 1 week. Dawn. At the citadel you destroyed. North Courtyard."
The bird disintegrated in a burst of light, plunging them into the deepening darkness. Alidian sighed, realizing Tariah had chosen the location in an attempt to inflict regret. Dismounting, she handed the reins to Devkin and strode towards her tent.
"Can she hurt you?" Devkin asked.
"She cannot harm me in a Farsight council," Alidian said.
"Good," Devkin said. "Then keep her talking for as long as possible."
"Why?"
Astyn asked, overhearing the comment. Alidian and Devkin exchanged a look. None of the others knew of Elenir, or of her plan to infiltrate Tariah's castle. Alidian offered a comforting smile.
"The more she talks, the more we learn," she said.
It was technically true, but misleading. Astin didn't question it.
Good luck. I wouldn't want to speak to that woman for anything.
Aura smiled at the uncharacteristic vehemence to his tone.
Nor I.
Astin smiled and wheeled his mount away. Aura went with him, and the two rode towards the command tent being set up at the rear of the army. When they were gone, Devkin gestured to Alidian's tent.
I'll make sure you are not disturbed, he said.
She nodded and ducked into the tent. Then she lifted the stone from the floor, shaping the rock into a large chair. Drawing a breath to steady herself, she sank into her seat, knowing her adversary was sitting in the Herosian fortress. Across the chasm, the two oracles dived into their farsight, each choosing that, whatever the cause, both would travel to Dawnskeep to meet in 1 week's time. Alidian watched the branches fold upon themselves, intertwining to form a single option. Then she pressed her consciousness into the seventh day at twilight. The scene cleared until she saw the ruined fortress of Dawnskeep. Her jaw clenched as she viewed the great tower where it had fallen, the remains of the city scattered around its bulk. Nearby, an enormous hole had been torn into the courtyard, where her dragon had ripped its way to the surface.
"Is it difficult to see what you have destroyed?"
Taraya asked, striding to greet her. Dressed in the regal white of an oracle empress and bearing a crown, Taraya exuded authority and power. She wore armor and an enchanted cloak, which glimmered even through the farsight.
"I destroyed the fortress," Alidian said. "You destroyed the peace."
The magic of rage boiled in Alidian's veins. It had been weeks since she'd felt its power, but facing Taraya, it surged to the fore. Standing just feet from her, Taraya stared at her, a slight smile on her face, as if she knew what Alidian was thinking.
"She is our betrayer," Whisper hissed.
"I know we are adversaries," Taraya said, "but I'd like to dispense with the wordplay."
"Does this mean you'll tell me what you're planning?" Alidian asked. Alidian expected her to smile, but it was pity on her face.
"There was a time that I would want you to die, but that time has since passed."
"Now you want me to live?" Alidian scoffed. Taraya sighed.
"You know, we are not so different. We want peace for all, so that every race can have a life bereft of violence, of bloodshed, and die of old age. You want to take their freedom."
"Their freedom leads to pain and loss," Taraya said.
"Don't you see that? They are like children told to play with swords, yet you are surprised when blood is spilt. I will give them the freedoms they have earned, and in time grant them more. Perhaps one day they will truly be free."
"The people deserve to choose their own life," Alidian said, "with all the joy and pain it brings." Taraya sighed and shook her head.
"I'm sorry, but this war is about to come to an end, and you have chosen the wrong side. Soon you will stand alone, and those you call friend will clamor for your blood."
"You may be powerful," Alidian said, "but you cannot stop my army."
"I don't mean to stop your army," Taraya said. "I mean to own it."
Alidian frowned, confused by the turn in conversation, but the sheer confidence on Taraya's face could not be ignored. The woman truly believed that Alidian's army would become hers. But the question was,
how?
Alidian challenged.
"Go and find out," Taraya said. "The moment you entered the Empire, they were infected by the plague. It's only a matter of time now."
Alidian heard a distant shout and jerked to the side. She glanced to Taraya and the woman nodded. Alidian scowled and extinguished her magic, returning her vision to the room. She reached the door of the tent just as Devkin thrust it open.
"Alidian," he said, relieved. "Some of the soldiers have gone mad. They are calling our army traitors and striking anyone nearby.
How many?
She asked, fear threading into her gut.
Only a handful, he exclaimed. General Astin has ordered them shackled.
Abruptly a cloud of smoke burst from the ground and Elenir appeared, her sudden appearance causing a Lydian to stumble back and Devkin to palm a sword. Then she phased to a normal appearance.
I discovered Tariah's plan, she said in a rush.
I know, a Lydian said, stepping to the door of her tent. The conflict was immediately recognizable, pinpoints of shouts and flickering lights scattered throughout the rebellion forces. Shouts and the occasional clash of blades was evident, punctuated by cries of pain. Then another incident arose, and another.
It's too late, a Lydian said, horrified.
For what? Devkin asked, whirling as a new man began shouting just 100 yards away. His companions were quick to restrain him, but he continued to scream.
Traitors! He bellowed. You have betrayed the oracles!
Elenir released an un-oracle-like curse. The blasted woman started a plague.
We're getting sick? Devkin demanded.
Not in the flesh, a Lydian said. In the heart. Tariah didn't want to fight us because it was only a matter of time until our army becomes hers. Elenir nodded. It's a plague of loyalty. Devkin's eyes lit with understanding.
And we just brought her reinforcements.
Chapter 27 Willowbrook. Avoiding villages and travellers, Raiden led the way to Willowbrook. Raiden had always seen the townsfolk as allies, but now he could not shake his doubt. In the homeland of friends, he had never felt such fear. Several times Jester or Red slipped into a village in order to hear the tales, and from them they learned that a Lydian had reached Tarosian with the rebellion forces, but word had spread that Elenir had disappeared, and rebellion forces were beginning to riot. Raiden felt the press of time. If the tales were true, the plague of loyalty was spreading through Elidian's army, and unless he found a cure, Elidian would witness her forces turn against her. Setting a blistering pace, they reached Willowbrook as night fell, and settled into the tree line to examine the village. Small but well-ordered, the settlement boasted a single inn and tavern, the latter occupied by the fishermen that lived in the village. Like most villages situated on the inland sea, Willowbrook forged a living on the water. Fishing vessels bobbed at the end of short docks, their sails furled for the night. The main street contained homes on the landward side, their roofs obscured beneath the great limbs of the oak forest. Between the street and the sea were places of commerce. A blacksmith, shipbuilder, salting warehouse, and other businesses bordered the docks.
"Looks normal to me," Jester murmured with a shrug.
Red nodded. "A simple fishing village. There are dozens along the coast. Why would Elsin come here?"
"She says the villagers have dirty souls," Marrow said with a frown.
"What does that mean?" Winter asked, but Marrow was arguing with the tree about its roots, prompting the roots to move so she could be more comfortable.
"Loth," Winter whispered, and the body mage joined her.
Loth leaned into the tree beside her.
"What do you need?"
"Scan the village," she said. "See anything out of order?" Loth blinked, and his eyes narrowed.
"Fishermen in the street."
He pointed to a couple striding down the road and then sniffed.
"He still reeks of his daily catch. The woman beside him seems to be his wife. They're talking about the children."
"What about the tavern?" Raiden asked. "Hear anything out of the ordinary?"
Loth extinguished his vision charm and enhanced his hearing, cocking his head to the side.
"They're worried about the Empire and the Rebellion's invasion."
Then he frowned.
"Someone's practicing with a sword. A duel, it sounds like. No, there's more than two. A lot more." "I don't see a training hall," Jester said.
"Perhaps it's in a basement?" Red asked.
Raiden shook his head.
his eyes on the village. On the outside, it seemed completely normal, yet he sensed an aura of falsehood that set him on edge. He would have liked to simply walk in and listen to the tales at the tavern, but caution required a different tactic.
"Winter," he said, "take your Verinai and check out the houses. See if you discern anything out of place and meet back here by dawn. Red, you and Marrow look at the blacksmith and the shipbuilder. Jester and I will take the salting warehouse and the store. Don't get caught."
He caught Marrow's eye to ensure she understood his words. She groaned in response.
"Fine," she said, drawing out the syllable to display her irritation.
They all nodded and slipped away. With Jester at his side, Raiden worked his way down the slope to the nearest structure, the store. Placed at the end of the road, the building contained a long porch and a home above. Both were dark, and Raiden pointed to the second floor. Jester uncoiled his shadow whip and flicked it upward, the whip catching the shadows on the roof. Then he scaled the wall and disappeared through a window. Raiden drifted to the back and withdrew a set of picks. Inserting them into the lock, he worked the mechanism until it gave, and then eased himself into the darkened room. He waited for his eyes to adjust, but the room was exactly as expected. Bags and crates of goods waiting to be displayed. He checked their contents, even shoving his hand into the sack of flour, but found nothing. He shook his hand free and threaded his way to the opening that led to the front of the store, but it too lay empty. In the dim light, he circled the shelves, searching for anything that seemed out of place. He found nothing out of place, but his sense of unease did not abate. 5 minutes after entering, he slipped outside and waited behind the trunk of a tree until Jester appeared. Raiden raised an eyebrow, but the assassin shook his head, indicating he too had found nothing. Drifting from shadow to shadow, they reached the salt warehouse next door, and Raiden picked the lock, while Jester stood watch. The lock was newly installed and boasted several pins, prompting Jester to lean over.
"Sometime before the war ends?"
Raiden grinned just as the lock gave.
"Still faster than you."
They slipped inside and were instantly assaulted by the smell. Fish and salt combined for an overwhelming reek, forcing Raiden to cover his nose as he ducked behind a crate. Barrels of salted fish lined the wall and stacked to the ceiling, while a preparation area dominated the other side. Nets had been rinsed with fresh water and hung from the ceiling to dry, ready for the next day of labor. A set of large doors faced the sea, where the daily catch could be loaded on carts and wheeled inside for salting. Salted and smoked fish were major exports of the region, and was likely the primary source of income for the villagers.
"Why guard the salt?" Jester whispered.
Raiden followed his gaze to see two men standing at the front of the warehouse, their postures bored but alert. They stood where they had a clear view of the street through the front windows, and a view of the interior of the warehouse. At first glance, they appeared to be fishermen. Their clothes were homespun and made of wool and cotton, the colors drab and faded. But a slight bulge beneath the tunics revealed armor and weaponry, and their stances were that of professional soldiers. Raiden and Jester exchanged a look and by unspoken accord retreated the way they had come. Once they were outside, they returned to the village overlook to await the others. When they were safely within the welcome shadows, Raiden pointed to the village.
"What are soldiers doing in Willowbrook?" he asked. "And why are they hiding their presence?"
"They're not soldiers," Jester said, scratching his goatee.
"One had a tattoo of the Terros prison, so I wager they're mercenaries." "But why guard the curing process?" Raiden mused. "And do the villagers know about them?"
A rustle in the branches caused them to turn and find Red and Marrow stepping into view. Marrow looked excited, but her hair had turned white, and she looked like a dark elf, right down to the clothing. Before Red could speak, she talked in a rush.
I've never snuck into a guarded camp before. She wants to sneak in again. Do you think they saw us? No, we were stealthy, and the men didn't even see me.
Even when she hung from the rafter above their heads and made faces at them, Red cut in. More mercenaries?
In the blacksmith's shop, she said with a nod. Two, both dressed as fishermen over their armor.
Any sign of Master Skirl?
Both shook their heads, and Marrow began to speak again, but this time her features began changing.
They aren't mages, but she says their weapons are all enchanted. And not long-time enchanted, but recent, just a few months old, but powerful, and different magics.
She suddenly noticed she was back to her old self, and squeaked in surprise. Her head returned to a dark elf, but her body didn't, and in quick succession her skin flashed black, then white, and then green, eliciting a giggle. Then abruptly she morphed into a large, bearded barbarian. Her features clouded with anger, but before she could shout, Red spoke in a soothing tone.
"They're guarding someone," she said.
"Or something," Jester said. "The source of the plague?" Raiden asked.
Red looked down at the village and shook her head.
"A small army could destroy the mercenaries with a coordinated attack, so I doubt it guards much."
"Agreed," Raiden said. "Elsin would place more defenses to guard the source of the plague."
"The source is probably at Herosian," Red pointed out. "We never did make it into the underbelly of the fortress."
"But why guard this place at all?"
Jester asked, sweeping his hand at the village.
"There's nothing of value except fish and salt, neither of which has much value."
Raiden shifted to look down at the village, wondering what about it set him on edge. It looked like any other village, right down to the pair of men stumbling out of the tavern on their way home. A woman opened the door to greet her husband, but the encounter was oddly forced, her angry condemnation of his drink sounding off, albeit accurate. As they watched the village gradually turn to slumber, they waited for the Verenai to return. Just when Raiden began to worry, Winter and Lorth filtered through the trees with the other Verenai.
"What took so long?" Raiden asked.
"Most of the houses are empty," Winter said. "But the villagers appear to be soldiers in disguise. It took time to search them all."
"Even the women are armed," Lorth said.
"But why?" Jester asked, sparking the same questions as before. Raiden frowned and examined the town again, struggling to tease his doubt to the surface. It was maddening, like an itch just out of reach. He reviewed what they had seen, carefully examining his memories in the hopes that the truth would emerge. Then he scanned the empty village streets, his eyes settling on a toy horse in front of the blacksmith's shop. Obviously intended for a child to use while their parents worked the forge, it seemed forlorn and lonely on the porch, the shadows casting a sadness to the toy as it awaited its young rider. The sight brought his idea to the surface in a burst of clarity.
"Did you see any children?"
he asked, spinning to face the group. Red frowned and shook her head.
"None. I saw toys," Winter said. "But no young ones."
The other Verenai nodded their agreement, and Raiden turned to Lorth.
"See if you can hear a child crying."
Lorth shrugged and closed his eyes, an expression matched by Marrow, the giant barbarian. The seconds passed into minutes, and still they waited. Then Lorth furrowed his brow and opened his eyes.
"A baby is crying, and his mother offers comfort."
"From where?"
Winter asked. "It's faint," he replied. "Like coming from a great distance. Or underground."
Marrow began to giggle, the sound of anticipation. Finally her appearance returned to normal, but the change went unnoticed by those in the group. The Verenai had grown accustomed to the girl's erratic magic.
"Village streets and smiling men seek to hide what lies beneath," Marrow said.
"And what is that?"
Red asked. Raiden gestured to the village.
"A prison."
Chapter 28 The Red Hand.
How can a village be a prison? Loth asked. Elsin has imprisoned the villagers and replaced them with mercenaries, Raiden said.
Why not kill them? Red asked. Elsin has no qualms about using the Verinai to kill.
Sorry, Winter. Winter sighed.
You speak a bitter truth. Why would she keep the villagers alive?
Necessity, Jester said, pointing to the ships. Mercenaries don't know how to fish, and they would need the villagers alive to keep up pretenses.
It sounds plausible, Winter said, but it doesn't explain why.
Raiden frowned and considered the options.
She's using mercenaries, not Verinai, so perhaps she doesn't want the guild to know what she's doing.
I wager the mercenaries don't know either, Red said.
True, Raiden said, but they're guarding something.
Master Skirl? Winter asked.
Perhaps he is hidden beneath the village? Jester asked.
We have to be careful, Red said. If we just walk in, they might kill the villagers.
Elsin has taken great pains to hide a secret, Raiden said. It's time we find it.
He assigned watch posts, and the group split up, choosing camps around the village in order to get a full view. One of the Verinai had animal magic and conscripted a group of squirrels to relay messages. Then they settled in to watch. Dawn broke shortly after, and Raiden watched the mercenaries rise and set about their daily labors, repairing nets and setting sail. Four boats departed at sunrise, while women did the wash and cooking. As the hours passed, Raiden's suspicions were confirmed. Men repairing nets committed errors, the fishermen returning with few fish in their nets. The women cleaned the linens but kept hesitating, as if they were uncertain where things were located. If those details weren't enough, their movements were those of someone trained for combat. Older men lingered on porches, but only on those with an approach to the village, marking them as sentries. Raiden traded watch with Jester and Red, and they woke him when the sun set on the horizon. The village activity waned as he yawned and took his place in the trees. Rubbing his eyes, he gestured to the people.
Any news?
Plenty, Red replied. One of the Verinai scanned the earth beneath the village. Seems there's a series of caverns that access the salt warehouse and the blacksmith shop, as well as the tavern.
Now we know why they were guarded, Raiden said with a nod. They are well trained and armed, Jester agreed. Every position serves a dual purpose, sentry and villager. Even those on the ships do not travel far offshore, and they watch the coast in either direction.
What about Master Skirl? Raiden asked.
No sign of him.
Jester handed him a strip of dried meat and a pouch of nuts and fruit.
Winter grew these herself and harvested them for an evening meal.
Raiden savored the meal.
Summon the others. We need answers, and we're out of time.
Red spoke to the squirrel perched next to her, and it skittered away. Then she went to rouse Marrow, who'd fallen asleep shortly before. The girl woke violently, nearly blasting Red in a burst of ice.
Sorry,
she grumbled, as Red furiously sought to warm the frost on her tunic.
She doesn't like being woken early.
It's nightfall, Red exclaimed.
It's hardly early.
It's always early,
Marrow said, and then yawned.
What's happened?
We're invading the village, Raiden said.
Marrow's eyes sparkled with delight.
When?
As soon as winter returns, he replied.
Red was forced to distract the bouncing Marrow to prevent her charging into the village by herself. As the sun sank below the horizon, a whisper of movement heralded the arrival of the Verinai.
Are we going in? Winter asked.
Tonight, Raiden said.
About time, Loth said. I'm tired of listening to the children asking their mothers why they can't go outside.
Jester gestured to the street below.
They outnumber us by 4-1, and have weapons enchanted by Elsin to guard against just such an incursion.
We have Marrow, Red said, causing her to giggle.
Do we know who they are? Winter asked. Raiden shook his head.
No.
Yes, Red said. All looked to her in surprise, and she said, This afternoon I saw the tavern owner step outside. It was just for a moment, but a glimpse was enough to recognize him. He's the bandit known as the Red Hand. Winter raised an eyebrow. I thought he was captured by the Rune Guard before the war. He was supposed to be executed.
It appears Elsin turned the bandits into her own mercenaries, Raiden said.
Although it came as a surprise, it wasn't overly unexpected. Elsin and Taraya wouldn't have wanted to hire a regular mercenary band for risk of talk. Creating a new group ensured anonymity.
The man is arrogant and cruel, Red said, not to mention devious.
Can she please punish him?
Marrow asked.
We don't like bullies.
Raiden hesitated and then gestured in invitation.
If you want to face the bandit leader, you are welcome to it, but I'll go with you. Remember, we need him alive.
He turned to the others.
Marrow and I will go into the tavern and act as bait. When they come to us, Winter will attack the streets. Jester and Red will eliminate the sentries and free the villagers.
If we're late, you'll be overwhelmed and crushed, Winter warned.
So don't be late, Raiden said.
She nodded, and they gathered their gear. Raiden waited while Jester and Red infiltrated the village, taking their positions closest to the blacksmith and the warehouse. Then Raiden and Marrow entered the village. They trudged down the street like weary travellers, calling out a greeting to the men playing dice on a porch. The sentries smiled and nodded, but one got up and left to spread the word.
Keep your pace even, Raiden murmured. We need to get inside the tavern before they get suspicious.
She knows how to be cautious, Marrow said.
You're bouncing up and down.
Sorry,
she said, but didn't stop.
Sorry,
she repeated with a grin.
I won't let you down, Captain.
The last time we fought, you nearly turned me into a horse, he said.
I'd forgotten about that, Marrow said with a giggle. It was fun, though.
Raiden rubbed his forehead and then ascended the steps to the tavern. Upon entry, he scanned the room, marking the dozen soldiers dressed as fishermen and villagers. The man at the bar looked up at their approach and smiled, his eyes sliding off Raiden to look at Marrow.
Travellers, he said. It may be troubling times, but we're happy to see you.
His eyes flicked back to Raiden and went wide in recognition. Then he went rigid and opened his mouth to shout a warning. Before he could, Raiden raised a finger and pointed to the Red Hand.
Marrow, you are unleashed!
Releasing a maniacal laugh, Marrow morphed into a rock troll. Her clothes swelled to contain her suddenly massive form, the stitching impossibly holding as she rose to 10 feet in height. Muscles rippled across her arms as she discarded her cloak and flexed her hands. Only her head remained the same, now tiny atop a massive body. Such magic was unheard of, causing the entire tavern to freeze in shock and sudden fear. In the ensuing stillness, she giggled and charged. She slammed into the bar, tearing through the wood as if it were parchment. Catching the Red Hand about the throat, she charged right through the wall, carrying him outside and throwing him bodily against the neighboring building. Then she caught his foot and hurled him across the street like he was a sack of potatoes. Her roar of delight was terrifying. The sudden conflict drew the mercenaries from throughout the village, and they flooded toward the tavern. 10 became 20, and then scores appeared, each brandishing enchanted weapons. Distantly, Raiden heard Winter charge as they reached the street, but his whole attention was on the men in the tavern. The nearest drew a blade, and it glowed to life, the steel burning like an ember. With a wild yell, he leapt to Raiden, his sword coming down on Raiden's cloak. Raiden rotated and struck him in the back of the skull, knocking him to the floor. Then Raiden surged into motion. The bandits sought to surround and crush him, while several leapt outside to help the Red Hand. One came bursting through the wall and crashed through tables and chairs on his way to a stop. Through the opening, Raiden watched Marrow backhand a bandit and then kick another before catching the arm of a third. Lifting him above her head, she launched him over a building into the sea. His shriek faded until he splashed into the water. Raiden ducked and twisted, spinning his sword to keep the bandits at bay. Sprinting to the broken bar, he darted through the opening and then twisted, plunging his sword into the gap to catch the man attempting to follow. Then he leapt to the surviving section of the bar and flipped over two more bandits. Coming down behind them, he swept his sword across their backs before retreating for the wall. A man leapt for his flank, his searing sword cutting a burning line across a table as he lunged. But Raiden leaned back, bringing his knee up into the man's face as he tumbled past. He cried out as he crashed through a table, his searing sword clattering to the floor as he grasped his broken nose. The others moved with more caution and attempted to surround him. Raiden stepped to a table and leapt to a light orb, hanging from the rafters. Grabbing the chain, he swung himself over the flashing blades and leapt through the open door, sprinting into a maelstrom of combat in the street. Bandits lay dead in the road, and one of the Verenai among them. Winter had conjured earth entities, the golems taking the blows from the enchanted weapons, so Loth could strike from the side. With active agility, he streaked among the bandits, cutting them down. Sounds of battle came from within the salt warehouse and the smithy, followed by the doors bursting open at the blacksmith shop and a body tumbling into the street. The man managed to grab his sword and rise into Marrow's hand. She palmed his skull and tossed him through a window above where he crashed out of view. Cackling, Marrow charged about the battle, striking the mercenaries with abandon. A trio leapt in behind her and fired enchanted bows, the arrows plunging into her back. She went rigid and rotated to face them, the amusement in her eyes replaced with anger. The trio of archers stumbled back at her scowl.
"She dislikes your lack of honor."
From 30 paces away they sought to flee, but Marrow brought her hands up. The earth rose up to either side of the fleeing archers, the stone shaping into hands. They cried out in fear as Marrow brought her hands together, and the hands closed in a crushing clap. Although they had the numbers, the bandits began to flee, sprinting away from the mad rock troll with the tiny head. The retreat quickly turned into a rout as they fled, leaving their dead and wounded. Raiden deflected a final strike and kicked the woman in the chest, knocking the air from her lungs and sending her to the street. Then he placed his sword on her throat, and she reluctantly tossed her sword away. "Winter," he called. "Round them up and take their weapons." She nodded, and the Verenai began disarming the remaining soldiers, whereupon one began to heal the wounded. Oblivious to the end of the combat, Marrow playfully chased the remaining soldiers into the woods, returning a moment later as her normal self. Raiden stepped to the broken form of the Red Hand. He clenched his numerous wounds, his face twisted in agony. But despite what Marrow had done, it seemed she'd cushioned her blows, preventing his body from shattering. Villagers stepped into view from the warehouse, blacksmith shop, and tavern, their eyes lifting to the night sky as they cried out in delight. The Red Hand scowled and glared at Raiden as if he'd committed a crime.
"You will help me," Raiden said, and gestured to Marrow, "or I'll leave you to her mercy."
The man swallowed.
"What do you want?"
"Master Skirl," he said. "Is he beneath the village?"
"We're just the gate," he said.
He jerked his head toward the sea.
"What you're looking for is out there."
Chapter 29. The Birth of Magic. Toron had been in prison before, but never with a pirate rock troll. Galathon and his band prowled about like caged beasts, the tension rising by the moment. Toron spent much of his time in one of the rooms adjacent to the main prison,
alone. Conflicts erupted, and each time Galathon ended them with a barked command. Food was provided through a channel at the back of the main hall, but the Mind Reaver refused to eat this close to its prey. Severon stalked the edge of the prison wall, its growls reverberating back to the tense pirates. 4 days after their imprisonment, Toron was sleeping in his chosen cell when the door abruptly slammed shut, as did the other doors of the prison. Rising, he stepped to the door and peered through the small window. A handful of the pirates had chosen cells like his, and they pounded on their doors, shouting in anger. Galathon had chosen the entire main hall as his bedchamber, and slumbered on the floor, oblivious to the din. Severon raised its head and then rose to its feet, releasing a snarl in Toron's direction. A whisper of machinery heralded the opening of a second door at the rear of Toron's cell. He whirled, drawing on the shadows of the room to craft a pair of blades, but a burst of blinding light shredded his weapons and caused him to shield his eyes. He'd expected a person, but instead the opening revealed an empty corridor. Curious, he stepped to it and peered down the hall. To his surprise, it ran the length of the prison and connected to the other cells. None of the other cells were open. A blinking light invited him to approach the end of the corridor, but he hesitated, wondering if he should refuse the obvious invitation. Frowning, he stepped out of his cell and followed the hallway to the end of the corridor. The walls were pristine and white and emitted a bright glow. Smooth to the touch, the material was not steel or stone, yet just as formidable. He tried fire on the walls, but could not damage the barrier. The corridor did not bend or fork, and went straight to its destination, a small room a short distance from the prison. He came to a halt at the transparent door and frowned. In the room beyond, an X-shaped table sat on a raised section of the floor, the surface containing restraints and shackles. Strange machinery extended from the vaulted ceiling and pointed to the table. Toron's flesh crawled as he recognized it as a place of experimentation. The experimentation chamber sat in a larger chamber, one obviously intended for observation. Elsin, Mal, and a third figure appeared from another corridor and walked up to the clear walls. Then Toron recognized her. Maressa, second Empress Oracle of the Empire, stood with Elsin. He'd thought Elsin was acting against the Council, but if that was true, why was Maressa present? Her appearance left Toron feeling uncertain, and he looked between the two, trying to glean the truth from their expressions. "Only the disturbed would like such a refuge," Toron said. Elsin smiled and swept her hand at the room.
"You do not like it? This room is the birthplace of magic."
"This," he snorted in disbelief. "I don't believe you." She shrugged and pointed to the ceiling.
"This entire island served a single purpose, to test and measure the race of man."
"Only man?" he asked. She released a mocking laugh.
"There is so much lost to the ravages of time. Much lost on purpose. The little that remained of ancient secrets was hidden in this city. To even set foot on this island would have invited your death. And trust me when I say you do not wish to meet the city guardians."
"How did one so weak as yourself find a way inside?" he asked. Red blossomed in her cheeks, but she controlled her anger.
"With this."
She held aloft a small pyramid. Purple and glowing, it seemed to pulse with life and absorb the light of the room. It fit into her hand, yet exuded power, and he recognized it as the object Mal had stolen from the ancient tower. She smirked as he retreated a step.
"Such a fear of the unknown," she chided. "This once controlled the ancient vessel where you found Marrow, but it had been taken and placed in their outpost on the coast. Mal retrieved it and brought it here.
The machines on the island recognized us as one of their own, and so we were permitted passage.
Marrow helped you get here, he guessed.
Elsin swept her hands at the city. Much of what I know about the ancients came from Marrow. Her abilities may be chaotic, but asking the right questions eventually led me to this city. I can only imagine if I had more time with her what secrets I would learn.
She doesn't know anything about the ancient race, he said.
She knows what she wants to know, Elsin replied, her eyes glittering with excitement. Can you imagine? Simply wanting truth, and it comes. Marrow will do much for our cause, Maressa said. When we have her again, Elsin can continue her work.
I'm not letting you have my sister, Toron growled.
You have no choice. Maressa's features tightened with regret. The Mage War has killed two of my Oracle sisters, she said. With Marrow's aid, Guildmaster Elsin has discovered the means to replace them.
You cannot bring them back from the dead, Toron said.
Of course not, Maressa said. But now we can create a new Oracle.
He scowled. You think you can trust Elsin?
The balance must be kept, Maressa said. Elsin has always sought the ancient secrets, and now her passion will save the Oracle's council.
And you think this machine will turn her into an Oracle? Toron asked, stabbing a finger at the ominous table.
I know it, Elsin said. So be grateful I am permitting you to watch.
She reached to a panel at her side and touched a symbol, and the door on the opposite side of the room swished open, rising into the ceiling. Toron put a hand against the door that separated him from the experimentation chamber, but it was as solid as the prison wall. Elsin and Maressa entered, and Elsin produced a vial of blood.
The ancients used this machine to test what mages could do, she said. They never suspected how powerful we would become. The other chambers were destroyed in the dawn of magic, and this is the only one that remains intact.
Maressa, Toron said, she will betray you, just as she betrayed me.
Her plan is solid, the Oracle said. With her on the council, we can rebuild what Alidian has destroyed.
And Taria, he demanded. She condones this action.
Maressa's expression tightened.
My sister has lost herself to the war, and seeks only to destroy Elenir and Alidian. She does not perceive the cost.
You cannot trust Elsin, he repeated. You do not understand.
Maressa shook her head and turned away, and helped Elsin slot the vial into the machine.
Sianna died at Alidian's hand, she said quietly. And I was forced to extract this sample from her corpse. It is the only way to continue her bloodline.
Mal entered the chamber with a pair of braces, which Elsin placed on her arms. Both were socketed with clear runestones bearing the symbol of magic. When she was ready, she reclined on the bed and nodded to Mal.
Son, Toron pleaded, please don't do this.
Mother knows truth, he intoned.
Maressa stepped back as the machine glowed to life, the two arms extending to touch her wrists, directly over the clear spheres. Light blossomed in the room, causing Toron to shield his eyes from the glare. He expected a shout, a burst of noise, but the silence was even more disturbing. As the light faded, he lowered his hand to see both spheres glowing like miniature suns. Her face flushed with excitement, Elsin rose and raised her hands. When she spoke, her voice was low and tense.
The ancients used flaws in our blood to give us magic, she said, her eyes bright with triumph as she examined the blinding spheres. This machine measured Sianna's blood and evaluated its potential. With Maressa's aid, I cast these spheres to mimic flesh. One amplius to empower my magic, and one Ocleon to possess all the magics of an oracle.
Are you going to explain it or test them? Maressa asked, her voice becoming impatient.
Elthin raised her left hand and summoned a spark of lightning. She laughed in delight, and then spun the ambient air into a miniature storm. Although she possessed 9 talents, both lightning and air were not among them. Until now.
We did it, Maressa breathed. An oracle's magic has been replicated.
We did, Elsin said, staring in wonder at the storm in her hands.
Now to the second machine, Maressa said. Once the magic is embedded into your flesh, you will be able to join our council.
Elsin turned to Maressa and shook her head.
I fear it's time you saw the truth, she said.
What truth? Maressa asked, a trace of unease seeping into her voice.
The second machine does indeed place magic into flesh, she said. Much like this one, in fact. But it cannot add magic to a body that does not possess the right markers.
What do you mean? Maressa demanded. That was the entire reason you came here, to join the oracles.
No, Maressa, Elsin said, her eyes darkening. I don't want to join the oracles. I want to kill them.
Elsin raised her hands as Maressa's eyes widened. The lightning swelled in Elsin's hands, rising and sparking into a storm spear. With a shout of triumph, she threw it at Maressa. The powerful oracle sought to stop the weapon, but the spear had been empowered by the Amplius, and it pierced her chest, sending her crashing through the glass wall. Maressa tumbled into the observation room and landed in a heap, her body twitching as lightning coursed through her flesh, the concussive blast cracking the glass all the way to Toron's door. Elsin used a burst of fire to lift herself through the shards and land beside her. Glass tinkled under her feet as she approached the mortally wounded oracle. Maressa attempted to crawl away, but the guildmaster of the Verinai flipped her over with her foot and cast a spear of fire, the flames surpassing her previous control and turning a bright blue.
The oracles and their far sight are a cancer upon the people, Elsin said, shackling us to ignorance while they hoard knowledge.
Elsin, Maressa muttered, struggling to speak, to move.
Only Elenir knows all, Elsin asked. I know, and I will extract every morsel of knowledge before I end her life.
Please, Maressa said, raising a shaky and bloody hand. Elsin raised her spear.
My only regret, I didn't get to kill you all.
She plunged the spear through Maressa, driving the weapon deep into the floor. Maressa screamed, the sound laced with fury, fear, and regret. Then her strength abandoned her, and her voice failed. Her eyes dimming, she met Toron's gaze, and a flicker of magic escaped her fingers. Unnoticed by Elsin, the touch of fire leapt across the floor and melted a hole in Toron's cracked door. Then she moved her lips, mouthing the words, "Forgive me." Before they noticed his intention, Toron crafted a shadow mouse. The creature darted through the hole and scurried into the shadows, disappearing from view the moment Elsin's eyes settled on him.
"You see what I have accomplished?" Elsin asked. "In due time I will slay the whole of the Oracle Council."
"And become the Empress of the Empire," he finished. "Just how long have you been planning your betrayal?"
She laughed lightly.
"One does not plan a betrayal of Oracles, but the idea occurred decades ago. The Oracles were so fixated on their plan they never saw mine."
"Why let me bear witness?" he asked. "Why not kill me?"
"Because I want you at my side," Elsin said, the scorn fading from her eyes. "I want what we once had. I hoped that when you saw how far I would rise, you would seek to rise with me."
Toron hadn't expected that. He wanted to growl a retort, but the image of Maressa dead on the ground was too fresh a reminder. Instead, he slowly shook his head.
"Too much has transpired," he said. "But I will consider your request."
Her features hardened at the answer.
"I'll give you a day. Then I depart the island, with or without you."
Toron nodded and turned away, striding down the hall back to his cell. It was still open, but the moment he stepped inside, it shut. An instant later, the other cell door glided open and he entered the main chamber.
"Speaking to the enemy?"
Galathon demanded, stepping into his path.
"Crafting a key," he said,
and flashed a grim smile. Then he linked to his shadow mouse and directed the creature to begin its search. Flitting between shadows in the ancient city, the little entity sought a way to open their prison. Chapter 30. Plagued. Elidian stared at the overcrowded cells of the rebellion, struggling to contain her fear. In the week since the initial incident, thousands had become infected by the mysterious plague. Elidian had helped raise the earth into makeshift walls, but the need for space grew with each passing hour. Elenir spied on Tariah and managed to identify the curse, a plague of the magic of loyalty. Raiden's message had confirmed it and described their efforts to locate Master Skirl, the man responsible for the curse. Fearful that knowledge of the plague would cause a panic, Elidian shared the truth only with Devkin and her generals. She turned as a quartet of soldiers appeared, dragging their screaming companion to the cells. One managed to open the door and the others shoved him inside. Fashioned of spears, the door clattered shut, and the man grabbed the wooden bars.
"Join the Empire," he growled, his eyes bright with fury. "Before your miserable rebellion is scattered like dead leaves in a fall storm." "An hour ago it was your rebellion," one of the men snapped. "They will all betray you," Whisper said.
"They will not," Elidian said, causing a passing soldier to cast her a strange look.
"Use my power," Whisper said. "We will break their puny fortress and cast Tariah to the earth."
The temptation wormed its way into her heart, and she actually considered it, imagined herself destroying their walls, their mages, and even their titans. But she knew her rage would not be satiated, and she would slaughter her own army. She shuddered and swallowed against the image. Unable to bear the sight of the maddened soldiers, Elidian left them behind and made her way to the command tent. Devkin fell into step beside her, his hand on the hilt of his sword, his sharp eyes on the soldiers they passed. Their soldiers.
"I feel caged," Elidian muttered. "I wait on others to break the curse while I do nothing."
"We hold the rebellion against the plague," Devkin said. "That's hardly nothing."
A man shouted nearby and his companions pounced, wrestling him to the dirt, even as he shouted for the Empire. From beneath the pile of struggling forms, he spotted Elidian and screamed at her, his voice dripping with malice. Devkin tightened his grip on his sword.
"We should get you inside," he said uneasily.
"You want me to hide?" she demanded.
"We can continue your training," he said.
She came to a halt in a camp and turned on him.
"I will not cower in solitude while those who suffer stand in need."
Devkin stood his ground.
"The army is failing," he said. "We need a plan."
"This is my army," she said, her gaze passing over the surrounding soldiers. But they were not.
She realized they stood in the midst of Duke Senin's command, and many of the soldiers bore the sullen, angry expressions that heralded a turning. She turned a slow circle and realized just how many were about to join the Empire, and her presence brought them to rage.
"We need to reach the command tent," Devkin said.
"Too late," Elidian said.
One of the men abruptly snarled and picked up a spear.
"A Lydian betrayed the oracles," he snarled. "She deserves an execution."
A handful rose to subdue, but dozens rose to join. The shout became a rallying cry.